Let's go.
The recordings have started.
All right. Thank you, Kim. All right. We are underway. So, good morning, afternoon, evening, and late night greetings to everyone. And thank you for attending. Personally, as you might may well notice, I've got the graveyard shift here. It's 2 a.m. And not much better for Kimberly, and I want to thank her for staying up late to help us with this teleconference. And I want to thank our colleagues living in proximity to the UTC time zone for getting up early. And I want to thank our Asian Oceania colleagues for sacrificing their mid to late afternoon into early evening time for participating on this teleconference. Administratively, I'd like to note that Maureen Hilliard has submitted her resignation from the working group, citing ongoing conflicts with our rotation schedule, which either had her clashing with local evening meetings or apparently early morning ALAC teleconferences. She submitted her resignation with regret, and for the record, I accept it with regret. But her resignation, the reasons for it, do bring me back to the topic of meeting rotation timings. As you'll recall, we had Kimberly pull together a spreadsheet showing meeting timing preferences for each of us. And we have not properly discussed this, and I do not propose to do so on this call. However, I think we should have a discussion about this at our upcoming face-to-face meeting in Panama and see if we can agree on possible adjustments that will make things a bit easier for us all and hopefully for our secretariat as well. Additionally, I'd like the working group to know that our face-to-face meeting in Panama is now scheduled for 0900 to 1200 noon on Thursday, rather than being split over the lunch break, which was the last proposal I saw. I think in ICANN meeting speak, this is apparently blocks 1 and 2. We'll obviously have some sort of short break mid-meeting, but I'm pleased that the meeting gods decided not to split the meeting in two over the lunch period. Excuse me. Lastly, I'd like to advise you that we as a working group need to start paying attention to the working group's wiki. Bart and Kimberly are sorting this out with the idea that as we get a reasonably stable document, it should be brought up on the wiki so as to be available for the working group members' comments. And again, I remind working group members that we do indeed have a mailing list, and I do encourage you all to speak your mind on said list regarding our discussions on these teleconference calls. To date, the list has been deathly silent, and I don't take that as a good sign. So with respect to this teleconference, I think the plan is to continue examining the text regarding the retirement process that we began examining on our last teleconference and picking up from where we left off last time. The plan is to run through the text, I think as we've flushed it out to date, to the end, and then return back to the beginning of the text with any concerns, questions, suggestions, so we can move forward through it a second time. That second run through would be for a future teleconference coming up in preparation for Panama. And should we manage to actually get through the end of the text today, then Bart will introduce the stakeholder mind map, which is our next rabbit hole to go down. So I think at this point, unless there are some immediate hands with questions regarding what I've just covered, I think I'll ask Kimberly to bring up the retirement document, and we can begin with, I think, line 72, which is where we left off last time. So barring any hands, and I don't see any, Kim, you want to fire that up? Oh, we're here. I have to clear this.
It was pre-fired.
Pre-fired, okay. All right.
In the meantime, can I say what I repeat what I said on the list? The way we do this is we take the mind map, export it into a Markdown, and then run it into this without manual intervention. That means any changes that we make now should be will be in the mind map and then exported the same way. So we have changes only in one document and a bit of consistency. Then I always, as I said, I try to put the version number in the bottom and in the file number, so we always have the same documents. And I am circulating it to the list as in Landscape, which is not as good on paper as it is on screen, but it also leaves enough space for notes so that when we go through it, you have already space to write your notes and don't forget it.
Do we have, I see Peter has written on the list some concern about line 57. There's way too much going on here.
Peter, this is Bart. Yes, this has been recorded in the previous version. As said, we've discussed this with Eberhard and Stephen. In the next version, that will change. So we didn't want to change this version because you had this already. We move on till the end, and then we revisit the versions, including all the changes you suggested, like asset.
Peter,
does
that work for you? Yes, it looks like it does. Thank you, Peter.
This is the identical document to the one we discussed last time, and we made no changes to it other than the version number 2.0 in the 2.1 in the bottom. Otherwise, that is identical. And as I said, all changes, change requests, and all changes discussed will be noted, and then added to the mind map, and then the mind map will be exported, so that we haven't got 255 different documents floating around, but we have making changes in one location, and then for a consistent workflow. I think this is better.
I believe what the good doctor has just stated is that we are stacking up those changes, duly noted, and when we get to the end of the document, we will incorporate them, and then all the line numbers will change, and we can proceed from there with a second read of the document with new line numbers. So thus carrying forward, we need to flush out, obviously, lines 74 through 79. Any comments, thoughts? Welcome to hear them. Please raise hands, et cetera, et cetera. And I've lost how to raise hands. Anybody there? Am I being heard at this point?
Yes, you are, Stephen.
Nobody's stepping forward then. Okay, if there is no commentary on lines 74 through 79, can we move on to line 80? Anybody have any comments about line 80?
I have a comment on line 75. Ayana is I've said it before, Ayana is a function, so please do the notes throughout the document that we use the proper terminology. Okay. It's the previous document, so I'm not getting upset about it. It's just that we make sure that we revisit this in the future.
Duly noted. Anybody have any other concerns about the contents of line 74 through 79.
Stephen, it's Liz here. I just wonder if you wouldn't mind, I can't see the hand function. And if you don't mind, when you're ready, could I ask a question?
You can always ask a question. I have no idea where the hand function is at this point.
No,
it's, and I was under, actually... it's under participants. If you move your cursor over the window, the bottom line opens if it's closed, and then you go into participants, and there is the hand function.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Eberhard. That's really helpful. But Stephen, is it all right if no one else has their hand up, if I could ask a question?
You can absolutely ask the question.
Perfect. Thank you. So it just is a neat segue from what Eberhard just said. As I was reviewing the documents this afternoon, I just wondered if it would be helpful to put a glossary of terms at the top, because quite often we go through these things and there are things that I think, oh, crumbs, what does that mean when it's seen through the document? And it's just a function of a quick reference point just to make sure that we have acronyms correctly identified at the beginning, and then we don't have to keep going back and forward. So if that's helpful to everyone, that would be great to have a little service at the top of the document.
I think, Liz, what we're going to do with regards, I respect your request, I acknowledge your request, and I think it's legitimate. I think where a glossary of terms should go would be on the wiki. We're sorting this out on the CCNSO Guidelines Review Committee as well. We just published for communication to the council the rejection action petition, and we carved the glossary out and said, let's put this in a wiki, because the glossary is really a living document, and I think that's where we could go with that. So be happy to start doing one. And Kimberly, I think you can start with the one you just put together for us and throw it over the fence into this one as well, I think. Yeah. That won't change.
Stephen, we have a glossary document. Now, Bart has been working on it, and I think it is even on the wiki, and I think we have mentioned it before. One gets the impression nobody is accessing the wiki. I am personally haven't accessed it for a while. Once
I have not.
At the moment, we have a glossary, and maybe we'll send it to the list again. When this document is, and it's difficult technically to include it into this document, because this comes from the mind map. When we start typing it up, LaTeX does glossaries more or less automatically, so we don't have to worry about it. Any term we decide not needs to go in the glossary, we mark it in the text, and it's done fully automatic.
I think at the end of the day, Liz, the glossary is kind of dynamic, which is why I'm trying to push it into the wiki.
Stephen, it's Liz. I don't care where it goes, as long as we have it somewhere. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, thank you.
Are you good with that?
Yes, please. Doesn't matter. But just as long as we have it somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Liz. Anybody else? Can we continue on then to comments regarding line 80, who is required to inform when? This is really a placeholder, and it needs to be flushed out, so speak. Seriously, no one has a comment on this?
Martin has his hand up.
Ah.
And Liz has her hand still up. Liz, is it a new one, old one?
Martin, carry on.
Martin, you're on mute.
Martin, we cannot hear you.
But we can see you are on mute.
Ah. Martin is no longer on mute. Martin, go ahead, please, sir.
Maybe now your mic is on mute. We still can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Now, good morning, Martin. Thank you.
Right. Problem of having mute in different places and not being able to remember exactly where the unmute button was. Yeah, I recognize that this particular one is a placeholder. As soon as I started thinking about this one, who is required to inform and when, it seemed to me that the obvious people that are going to need to be informed are the what we in previous lives have described as the significantly interested parties. I can recognize why there isn't a particular requirement to notify the government, particularly if a country has disappeared, the government is likely to have disappeared. But there will be a sort of whole raft of significantly interested parties from the old registry. And so it would seem to me that that is probably the CCTLD manager's responsibility keep those people informed as it starts moving into the process. So that's my sort of starter for 10 in the section 1.2.2, there is the responsibility on the CCTLD manager to inform its significantly interested parties, which then in their particular case should include all its registrants, but also any residual local administration that stays in place, bearing in mind that there could be quite a lot of records sitting within the old administration's archive that would also need to be considered for preservation long term. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Stephen, Liz has her hand up. It's a new hand.
Liz, you have a new hand? Step back in. Thank you.
I have two new hands, beautifully manicured hands.
Are we going with the left or the right at the moment?
Now, listen, just a little aside. I'm sitting here with my foot up because I've had my foot reconstructed. So I'm not very excited about any kind of limb at the moment. Anyway, 1.2.2, I was reading through the documents again this afternoon, and I wondered if we could just add a little two words in 1.2.2, which is who is required to inform whom and when. And much of that is handled in another section, and I wondered if we couldn't collapse it into the same spot or do a double reference somehow, because Martin has identified the stakeholder community, the local community, and others that are identified elsewhere in the documentation, but it might help us if we have who does what when, rather than just when. I don't know how you can handle that in the document, but it would be easier if it was in one place.
Everything and anything can be handled in the document. I assume Secretariat has made a note of this so we can sort this one out in the background. And thank you, Liz, for that. I see Eberhardt's got it. Oh, Mick's got his hand up as well. I don't know which one went up first.
Eberhardt was first.
Eberhardt.
I agree with Martin and Liz on this. But again, this is just a mind map from a brainstorm. So this is just going through the ideas. But we can streamline it into one. Put it into proper English. Grammatically correct, I mean. And then later on, we'll fill this with proper text anyway. And with regards to Martin, I also agree with him that the registrar, the, sorry, the regist, factory operator, the CCTLD manager, has a duty to inform all its constituents, not only the significantly interested party, but everybody that is concerned. The easiest way is by publishing this on a website or and so on. But this is a detail that we should not mandate. How is this to be done? Because the situation in each CCTLD is different. I'm quite sure that, for example, in this commercialized one, which one is it? .tk or something? The way of they only have got one or two significantly interested party because all million domain names is owned by one operator. In some others, it's different. So I think we should make a note and write it in that the registry, the CCTLD manager is expected to inform all interested party in a suitable manner, for example, by way of publishing it on the web page.
All right. Thank you, Eberhard. Nick?
Does that work? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, amazing. So these notifications are just following on from the points which I basically support and agree with. I was wondering, I agree that the policy shouldn't go into the details of mechanistically how things sort of happen, but in terms of the overall, because don't forget, there could be a large number of registrants themselves affected who might not necessarily be aware of the implications and things being set in motion. And I wondered whether when there's a notification to the CCTLD manager or to the IANA function, that are these going to be made public somewhere or are these private communications? Or if you're a reasonably well-informed person who might not be aware, would these be newsworthy events? Would it be public domain notifications that this process is ongoing, and you could sort of track through at what process the retirement is going through from an external observer perspective, which could include, of course, the registrants. And I just wondered whether that had been thought of yet in terms of the overall, from a person standing outside of the perspective, outside of this whole process, that you could have a degree of transparency as to what's going on and who's responsible for what and what the rough timeline is likely to be. That was really my question.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Eberhard, you have your hand up again.
Yeah. Let us not forget, this is a situation where everybody concerned knows it's happening. If a country disappears or changes its names, everybody knows, everybody involved knows the country is going to disappear. I'm telling you. And everybody knows if the name of a country changes, that the name of the country changes. Therefore, it's fairly simple. It's trivial to inform that the country name change has an impact on the CCTLD. Yeah, so we don't have to go into too much detail. It's not something that happens out of the blue. Nobody knows, and then 18 million German .de domains are affected out of the blue. No, if North and South Korea reunite and .kp goes away, then the 50 domain holders in the north are aware, will be aware that this is going to happen eventually.
Okay, Nick, you have a additional comment, or is that an old hand?
Well, okay, I mean, the reason why this is sort of front of mind is that everybody knows in the UK that we have voted to leave the European Union, okay? I think that's common knowledge and domain. But there are 320,000 UK-based registrants of .eu domains who are no longer going to be entitled. And there's been a sort of a formal notification of termination of their registration contracts, basically. But I don't think that has really surfaced to the attention of the vast majority of those registrants who are blissfully unaware of that process, but it is at least public record if you should choose to go and look for it. And I suppose you know, it's just if the country has changed name, you have got an important domain name using that ccTLD. Planning for the retirement of that name might be something that would be easier if you could have a rough degree of predictability around, okay, in say 18 months time, 2 years time, this is going to disappear. I need to make some planning now, or actually I've got only 6 months or 3 months, and transparency around that process might be beneficial. Anyway, just a thought.
Nick, if I can remove my chair hat for the moment and suggest that you guys, as we need to in my country, sort out your government. I'm now putting my chair hat back on again.
Yes, but quite possibly. What I'm saying is you can't necessarily rely on the authorities or the ccTLD manager to do some of these notifications diligently, particularly where there might be a cliff edge to their own role in these things and everybody's got other things on their mind. And I just wondered, you know, is it going to be public domain, the fact that these notifications have been sent, and would it be a diligent registrant would be able to see without too much difficulty what the timeline and process is that this was actually in train?
Acknowledge. Everett, you have your hand up again, or is this a new?
Yeah, it's new. Nick, I think we are losing sight of what we're talking about. This working group is to define a policy on how to remove a domain name, a ccTLD, and once to retire one. Once we have decided how to do this, we of course have the timelines. And I said, I'm quite in favor of putting in a thing that the ccTLD manager must inform its constituencies or the affected parties by some common way, web page, whatever. But this is not our job here. What happens if Brexit happens and the 300,000 get tossed out of the .eu? That's a local policy matter for .eu. We have decided previously that this is not even an issue. We have noted it, that this is a situation, and we have written that this is not a situation we are discussing. We cannot mandate to a ccTLD manager how to do their business. If a country changes name, or a country ceases to exist, everybody is aware that this happens. And we can mandate that the ccTLD, once the process starts, at some stage, we can put this in the policy, the web the ccTLD manager has to inform its registrars and, if available, and the applicants by way of, in a suitable manner, for example, a web page. But that's it. We're not deep. This is if a ccTLD manager does not inform its constituents, this is not going to affect the policy that we are writing. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's going to proceed whether he does that or not. It's not, for example, I don't inform my constituency, so the retirement policy can't proceed any further. That's not what's going to happen. So we must not lose sight of what we're talking about.
I take that point totally, actually. I suppose it's a very simple thing, which is that would these be public record notifications when we're talking about who and how to inform IANA, ccTLD manager, admin and tech contacts, that these public domain communications, which are sort of transparently on the public record somehow, or are they just a sort of a private notification, which would otherwise not be the general public or anybody else who's interested wouldn't be aware of it. It seems to me it should be the former, but I don't agree. It's not necessarily a policy question. It's more how it falls in practice. But I think the practical aspects of this are quite important too. So that's it. We can move on. I didn't really mean to have a huge sort of conversation about.
No,
that, so.
I'm happy we had this discussion between you and Eberhard, and I am happy to acknowledge it. I presume it's been duly recorded by Secretary of Staff, but can we move on? Do you both agree we can move on?
Yes, of course.
Cheers. Thank you, Nick.
Yes, yes, of course.
All right. So, having had that discussion, can we proceed on with 82, 83, 84, 85. Any discussion there? Liz has her hands up, I think. So Liz, can you?
Thank you, Stephen. I just wanted to double check that this is really the default position when everyone's gone AWOL, if I'm reading that correctly. And I wonder then if this is an opportunity for us to use this as a subset of best practice that says in the need for special arrangement happens when everybody just disappears, but here's how we would set this out. Here's how the, in inverted commas, perfect scenario would be. Is this what we want to do? I think we should, because there may well in the future be an example where it's impossible for anyone or anything to take control. So, and to step through this series of arrangements. And the no arrangement question mark is unclear to me, because I think we really need to be sure about what that actually means. So I'd like a definition around what is when there's no arrangement in place. If no arrangement then equals that definition, then what would we do in that situation?
Acknowledge, Liz, if there's no arrangement, I'm not sure. I leave it to other members of the working group to contribute at this point.
I have my hand up, so I'm...
Who do I?
Yeah.
Ava goes first.
Okay. Thank you. Liz, the word best practice is not... we don't like to hear this in the CCTLD sphere, because it will trigger from many sides, including mine, a fundamental opposition. There is no mandate on how to run a CCTLD from top down. There is no best practice. We are not going to use that word. What we are doing here is we write a policy, but we will not prescribe to any CCTLD manager how to run its job. This policy is only going to be binding on CCNSO affiliated CCTLD managers during the time of their membership. If somebody doesn't like it, and it happened, just leave the CCNSO, and you're not bound by it. That said, we are going to write a policy. If there is no arrangement, we must have some general guidelines what we need, how we need to proceed. But the point is, we need to see what arrangements we are talking about first before we say need for what. If you say if there is no arrangement, we must first look what we do if there is an arrangement.
Thank you.
Nigel hands it up.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Eberhard said in quite a different way, really, the point or part of the point I was going to make. He used the word prescribe, and I was going to use the word prescriptive. We can't be prescriptive. We have to respect the principle of subsidiarity. So we cannot write in our policy how the CCTLD manager does what it does internally, in country, in house. It's perfectly open to a not very good CCTLD manager to do absolutely nothing at all until the last minute. And they will have some consequences as a result. I don't think that will amount to substantial misbehavior, but it will certainly attract the attention of the local press and the local government and the local population when suddenly from one day to the next, something bad happens with the CCTLD. I think we need to make sure that we have, like we did with the FOI, a high-level policy that precisely and unambiguously and uncontroversially, in other words, there is nobody in the CCTLD community who says anything other than, well, of course you do it this way. So we can't be going around telling people how to run their CCTLDs in this policy. Otherwise, we'll get so bogged down that we will never produce the policy.
Stephen, I can't put my hand up and make an intervention, please.
You absolutely may.
Just to, and that's the unfortunate thing of the, say, you missed the context of this 1.3, why it's included. If you would go back, and this is describing current practice based on the comparative analysis, if you would go back to the IANA reports and the board decisions, etc., what you will see, there has always been a kind of documentation arrangement between the CCTLD manager of the to-be-retired CCTLD and other CCTLD managers. Excuse me. And this specific arrangement documentation refers to that specific arrangement. It is about the, say, it's defining the roles of the different CCTLD managers, especially in, around the transition from the retiring CCTLD to a new CCTLD. So what to do with the old ones, do, say, registered or registrants have specific rights in the new ones, etc. That is the specific, and that's done under the auspices of the IANA function operator. So this is not about best practices. This is not how to run your CCTLD. This is specifically around a documentation of roles and responsibilities reflecting, say, to a future retirement. So that's upfront. So there is clarity and documentation of who is doing it. So just to avoid, and unfortunately you can't see, say, if we would change the order around from 1.3.1 to 1.3.2, you will see the difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Peter, I see you commented on the list. Do you want to explain further what you have put on the list? Thank you. Peter, we have you up.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for giving me the floor. I was typing here. I had a bit of background noise, but it seems to have vanished. So my point was that given that the TLD manager may have reservations about informing the constituency too early or immediately because they have a self-interest or other reasons not to announce a shutdown too early, that of course gives them a way to say, well, I received the information that the code was going to vanish, but only after 9 to 12 months my constituency was informed and I registered more domain names, therefore we need to have an extension of the process. And I think that's not going to lead anywhere, and we should remain with a trigger event. And if we do that, we don't have to deal with any detailed plans or prescriptions of how the CCTLD manager ought to inform the constituency. I mean, giving guidance who they might talk to is okay, but talking and communicating to their stakeholders is solely a matter and responsibility of the CCTLD manager, which is, it's kind of their quote-unquote sovereignty, but it's also their responsibility, and it should not give anybody a lever to delay the process, because that is, in the long run, that is detrimental to the overall process. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Nigel, I think you're up next, so it looks like.
I think that's probably an old hand.
Nigel, you can take down old hands if you want to.
Yeah. Peter, you can too as well. Anyone else?
It's just that the raising the hand is a little bit out of the way, and it's really hard work to find it sometimes.
It's much better than WebEx.
Oh, no, don't go there.
All right. Given that we have no further discussion on this point, and it has been duly documented, I hope, by the ICANN Secretariat, can we proceed?
That means next page, please.
Sorry, bingo. Arrangement. Not much to talk to here. So walk through.
This is Bart again. This is where you see that's why probably we need to I need to change the order. This explains what was in place between the IANA function operator and the relevant CCTLD managers at the time. And this was before it started the process in that sense. So you got the triggering event, then there was a lot of discussion going on, which we covered when we developed the scenario documents. And then in the scenario documents, you can see there is this, and you can see it in the decisions as well, there is this arrangement, for lack of a better word, between the different entities involved or that will be involved in the retirement.
All right, thank you, Bart. Can we proceed then, I guess? So this is the entire case. As you can see, can we proceed again? Okay, Bart, where do we want to go here?
Excuse me, I was still on mute. This is still part of that section. It describes the current situation and, the different... Yeah, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Stephen?
Now I can, yes.
Oh, sorry, there's something... I was on mute, unmuted, but it didn't work properly. So this is just the description, and what I've done as well, a reference to the other items in the mind map. So you can see how it interlinks.
Okay. Do we want then, given that we've gotten basically to the All right. Do we have any comments on this from the group?
Yes.
Nigel, go ahead. Whoever's here, Nigel or Liz, not sure which one. Which hand came up first? I cannot tell. Nigel?
Okay. One thing that is a common thread throughout these arrangement cases, and in fact I recall from my personal observation of the ICANN board and the resolutions and the reports as they were published contemporaneously, and I'm not sure from exactly where this impetus was coming. But one common thread is that there seems to have been a push from, let's say, it's perceived from my perspective to be from ICANN, but I'm being deliberately vague here. There seems to be a push to complete the decommissioning of the old CCTLDs in rather unseemly haste. We're beginning to realize more and more about the serious effects of link rot, the serious effects of forcing people to change effectively the names of their businesses. It's not just a telephone number. If you had to force Amazon.com to change their name, that the consequences would be quite dramatic. And I just want to point this out, and let's not just blindly say that we're going to copy exactly what was done in the absence of a policy in the past, but that we should be looking to provide a policy that is permissible, that allows people in country under the principle of subsidiarity to do things relatively quickly if that's what that country wants to do. But the minute you've basically got people who are going to be badly affected and are being forced external to the country by the CCNSO policy or the ICANN board or whoever, then that's something that we need to make sure that we try and advise against. Does that make sense, Dean?
I will leave it to the group to ascertain whether that makes sense. But thank you for your comment. Liz, I see your hand is up as well.
Thank you, Stephen. Just a question for Bart. And it related to the previous slide rather than the previous page rather than this one. I don't know how the document is being constructed or how we're getting to where we needed to go, but is it possible to do something like a front-loaded summary thing that the text is stable? Because those previous scenarios were quite clear that they are the things that have happened in the past and they're historic and they're important and we should have them recorded. But maybe there's a way of gradually sifting maybe to the top of the document things that are relatively complete. I don't know how that helps, but it might help us in closing off some of these open lines. I like this line way of looking at the document enormously. It's really helpful, but sometimes we keep repeating going over the same pieces of the puzzle. Maybe you and Kimberly or whoever can help with that.
This, but it this would what help might be helpful.
Where we could agree on, yeah. Go, Bart, sorry. Go.
So Liz, what is so what the way you should read this is, you see if you, Kim, you don't have to do this, but you see preceding number and line items. So the line numbering is added for just ease of conversation. In, say, this is section 1.3.2 or 1.3.1. We are in section 1.3. That refers to the mind map. And this is the disadvantage of having an outline document. Say, the overarching context is provided by the, say, the mind map. So if you have them next to each other, then it becomes easier to understand where we're heading. Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. This is following the outline. That being said, we are still, and then we take a step back, we are still in, say, a kind of analysis mode. So what you will see is some questions that have come up through the workshop in San Juan, which are added. And what I've done is, based on the scenario documents, added the references to the different board resolutions, IANA reports, etc. So that's the mixture you see, and because you lack the context on screen in this way, it's say the real structure isn't. This is just descriptive. But the best way, what I advise you is to look at it, say, have the mind map next to you, and then the outline document what we'll be discussing right now. And that's, and then the real background information is in the scenario documents, which are now, they were on the wiki space, but they're now easier to find on the wiki space, and as together with the glossary, as Kim already indicated in the chat. Does that answer your question, Liz?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Bart. It's helpful. And the reason why it's helpful to be clear is that every single working group that I am part of has a different way of working. And I just look for consistency and evolution and good sense and a linear expression of.
Thank you, Bart, for providing that explanation to Liz. And Liz, you still have your hand open. Is that an old hand? Martin's got his hand up. A new hand, Martin? Martin, go ahead.
Thank you, Stephen. Yes, it is a new hand. I think certainly the scenarios bit sits a little bit uneasily in this as a document. And I think from line 127, we need to start thinking very much more about the lessons that we learn from the scenarios, because at the moment, it almost looks like what we're doing with the scenarios is saying this is the way we do it, and then that runs foul to the fact that there is the subsidiarity issue, but actually all cases will have something a little bit different.
Each one's unique. Yes, continue.
Yeah. Now, that sort of leads me to the thought that we're almost missing a step between these scenarios and what we do from 127 on. I think we probably need to sort of go back and say that in the different scenarios, what were the different steps? Was that actually unique to the particular scenario that was under discussion? In other words, were the special circumstances? Were these things decisions that were made locally and therefore should continue to be made locally? That, I think, will then make it rather easier than just a sort of rather bald statement of 127 of trigger for TLD manager plan. Without actually saying, there needs to be some plan. There is actually that gap between, yes, okay, we're going to have to retire. Now, what do we need to put in place? And we've gone to the fact that, well, there seems to be a vague feeling that we should be retiring, and we immediately trigger a TLD manager plan. And I would suspect that no TLD will actually have a management plan until the process that he now recognizes that a particular TLD is going to be retired. I hope that makes some sense. It's just I've got this sort of feeling we're muddling two things. One, the analysis of understanding the processes in by example, and the other one, extracting the lessons that we need that would then form the bedrock of the policy that would then help people make the decisions for the things that they are going to do for the implementation. And at the moment, that middle bit is swaying to either the examples or the implementation rather than focusing on the policy because of the way that we're looking at it. I hope that makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. That's rather weighty. All right, anybody else?
Stephen, this is Bart. May I respond to Martin?
You may.
Yeah, thank you. So, Martin, I fully agree, but let's go back to what we've done in San Juan. That's where you came up with steps around the process of the retirement process. And say what we've done until then from that is put that in a kind of mind map, say with the different steps involved. And this goes back to the different details. And I thought it, or we thought it would be helpful if we added the text that's currently in, say, in the scenario documents and in the other documentation, especially the IANA reports and the board reports, to the different fields. And I fully agree that, say, that this is just leading up to what should be in something like a policy. So that's the policy development phase and what is lacking and what shouldn't be there. But this at least shows you, and that was the thinking behind it, at least shows you what is currently happening, and it doesn't go into the, say, the question, should this be included in a new policy? And my guess is that would say, once you got a full understanding of how things are happening, that question should be is best answered, and it is the theme for the Panama workshop of the working group, to go through the motions. Okay, now we've seen what has happened, what should be there, and what are the guiding principles that we need to take into account and that will drive the policy. But I agreed with you 100%. This is not a policy or should not return into a policy.
Thank you. Thank you, Bart. Thank you, Martin. Given that we're getting up to the top of the hour, do we want to suspend this further discussion of this to the next meeting and go on to the rest of the agenda?
I am in favor of doing just that.
Yeah, me too.
And Peter has to leave for different appointments, so maybe we get a move on. I agree.
So can we go to AOB? Is there any AOB?
Yeah, I have one, Stephen, very briefly.
And that is Nigel.
I'd just like to re-raise or re-highlight the issue of GAC participation, and I wonder where we are, because I think it's becoming quite important that we get a plan here, because we don't want to spend all of this work for the next 6 or 12 months only to find that our colleagues in the GAC haven't been paying attention and have some fundamental point that we should have dealt with, which upsets the whole thing. I mean, I'm just looking at the way ICANN's running round at the last minute with GDPR. We don't want to be derailed like that.
Nigel, I'm beginning to develop a dent in my forehead, beating it on my desk, trying to resolve the very question you've asked. I think we will have resolution by Panama or within the Panama meeting. So bear with me on that one.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. Obviously, I'm going to be confident that we may be able to, and these things always seem to happen better when the opportunity for a face-to-face chat is there. But I think we may be able to resolve that, I hope, by doing that. But if for some reason by the end of Panama we don't, this is kind of getting to the stage where the it is actually affecting the multi-stakeholder model. By not having this level of input from that side. So it might get to the stage where you might have to make a slightly more aggrieved and formal written statement. But I'll leave that to you, and I'll leave it till the end of Panama before I bring it up again.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you, Nigel. Anybody else?
Eberhard has his hand up.
I had to cough. I propose that everybody contacts their own government advisory council member or the ones that they know. The one that I wanted to contact is on vacation. I can see that on Facebook, and I don't want to bother him while he is in a good mood. I prefer to do this when he comes back. But I propose that everybody should talk to their GAC rep and inform them of what we are doing, and that we are looking at government advisory committee input, or an observer or a member even, and so that this issue is already known to a few people when it goes on to plenum.
I thank you, Eberhard, for that. Thank you. Anybody else with comments? Anybody else with any other business? Hearing none.
Wait. I have got some. We were thinking about what presentation software, what video conferencing software we are going to use. My personal view at the moment is that I am extremely in favor of Zoom over and above Adobe Connect. The quality of the graphics and the quality of the audio is so much better than Adobe Connect, so that I would propose we continue using it as long as ICANN has a license.
Well,
if they force us to use Adobe because they relinquish the license, that's another thing. But if ICANN continues to maintain the license, I propose that we continue using Zoom. I note that we are writing continuous note-taking with the Google Doc. I see that in real time. And when this is finished, I will download it and kern it so that I can send the notes out to the list within a day or two.
Okay, personally, I cannot keep up with all the stuff that's going on in various different windows and stuff. But that's me. I'm old. I don't know what the hell's going on here. I thank you for that. I, too, appreciate Zoom, certainly over WebEx, which I've been dealing with other ICANN teleconferences, with great disaster. So whatever, appreciate that. I just think at this point, I wanna terminate the meeting and thank everybody for participating. And we'll meet in 2 weeks in our run up to the Panama face-to-face meeting. So, thank you, and good night.
Bye, all.
Bye, all.
Thank you, Martin. Bye. Good night, everybody.